Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot where I was.
What? What do you... Oh, there we go.
Sorry.
This is what you requested.
I know. I just didn't know you were going to do the video version first. I was just expecting. Okay, we're doing radio edits from now on. Okay, I promise when I send you Susie Boggess or Patty Loveless or whoever I put in today, radio edits from now on.
This was the radio edit though. That was the single version. That's how it.
No, it's not what you'd hear on the radio. But again, this was all before you were born, so it's okay.
Oh!
Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fiddler joins us for our regular visit to wrap around what else is happening in the good old USA today. Carolyn, how are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Good, thanks. Good. I was getting set. I was going to start to talk to Luke about cheesy buns, actually. Something that was Carolyn or Christina Lorre brought a bag from the Dane County Farmers Market.
Excellent.
And they're spicy cheesy rolls, which are amazing. But it got me thinking between the Dane County Farmers Market. You see, you're nodding, Luke. You know these things.
Oh, yeah. If you want to make a gourmet burger, you got to go get one of Stella's spicy cheese rolls. And then you go all out and you get some tomatoes from the garden. You get a nice burger, nice slice of cheese on one of those spicy cheese buns. Oh, It is phenomenal. And that just screams summer.
I feel like I need to make these cheese rolls like a part of my life. They sound completely amazing.
I said, I'd never had them before. They just have little flecks of jalapeno in them or something. And I still haven't made them as a burger. But as Luke knows, I am a big hot breakfast fan. And so this week I've been using those to make breakfast sandwiches with a little fried egg and sausage and cheese. And oh, man. Anyway, it got me thinking between the Dane County Farmers Market. We just had the Wisconsin State Fair. The Minnesota State Fair is going on. A lot of people on the western side of the state head over to the Twin Cities to see that. So I was asking, as a Virginia native, if the Virginia State Fair is like a thing. We know it is big, and like the Iowa State Fair is huge and all that. But first off, is there a Virginia State Fair? And is that a thing that was big for you?
Oh, you betcha there's a Virginia State Fair. They don't even call it a Virginia Commonwealth Fair, which you think they would, because Virginia is very precious about its status as a Commonwealth.
Right.
Take it from one. But no, the Virginia State Fair has been around way longer than I've been alive. And I've been going since I was a little kid. I love the State Fair. Just the rides and the animals and all the random stuff that only exists at a state fair. In Virginia, it's not the big political event. It is in a place like Iowa, or some other, and even Wisconsin. It's just not a big political event, but it's a big event and I like going. And now my dad, his retirement hobby is breeding and showing brown Swiss cows. So really? Now I go and give him moral support when he's showing cows.
Well, I was trying to ease into that political aspect of it. We are in a time now where so much is done through 30-second TV ads rather than, you know, somebody standing up literally on a soapbox at a state fair, straw hat in hand, you know, making a speech to the crowd. It's nothing like that. But there is still something to be said about doing a little bit of retail politicking. It can't all be TV ads or even the new age of digital ads on Facebook or ads when you're playing video games or things like that. Or am I wrong? Would people just be happy if you know, retail politicking wasn't as much of a thing? What's your sense out there?
I think 2020 revealed to us that retail politicking in the form of like real contact with other human beings, like field work, knocking on doors, being physically present at a state fair and giving a speech to other real human beings in person, that makes a big difference. COVID drove a lot of things virtual, and that was as it needed to be for a while. But Democrats do well when we can connect with other humans and get a sense of what's on their mind and let them know that, you know, we're here to meet them where they are.
I do get a kick out of the times when, you know, different candidates have more success than others when it comes to personable.
Yes.
And that summer.
Is this a Mitt Romney segue? Because it feels like a Mitt Romney segue.
But I mean, look, we got to be fair. It's Dukakis in the tank. There's different moments that are out there. And it definitely has seemed lately that there are certain Republican politicians, and again, it cycles through, but there seem to be a couple that you see them at a fair and it's like, you're trying way too hard. This is not something you want. And in fact, Charlie Behrens, known for doing, kind of the Manitowoc type of newscast, has made a video skewering what a politician sounds like at the Wisconsin State Fair. I highly, highly recommend seeing that if you haven't already. So we're going to, after we take this break that's coming up, we're going to take kind of a whip around the country. So let me just give a quick overview in the time we have before the break and say, do we feel like there's been much motion in terms of the conventional wisdom that says Republicans are going to win the House and that Democrats have a chance to hold the Senate? Is that the current conventional wisdom, or has the needle moved one way or another as you see it?
Oh, I think that's the current conventional wisdom, and that's, in my opinion, a dirty word. But there are some justification for it, both in terms of more optimism for Democrats and less. So
we'll bounce around what those things that do create some sense of optimism, and then the reality check that goes along as well with Carolyn Fiddler from Courier Newsroom. We'll be back. You're up north. Carolyn Fiddler joins us, political editorial director for Courier Newsroom, as we take a look around the country and see things that they have in common with the Wisconsin races or make them goofballs completely on their own. And we'll hit as many of these as time allows. But when I was asking if there was a common theme that's out there right now, it isn't the hardest one to have seen coming, that, you attack to one side for the primary and then back to the center for the general. For example, Tim Michaels for a hot minute scrubbed the Donald Trump endorsement from his website until a reporter made note of it, and it quickly came back up there. And then there's been flip-flops on a whole host of other things. But there have been more egregious examples, Carolyn, and so why don't we start with Arizona?
Yeah, that's a great place to start. Blake Masters is the new poster child of scrubbing one's website after a primary to make one seem more appealing to non-pro-Trump extremists in a general election. Which,
what was it that he scrubbed? Was his abortion position, like specifics, or?
Yeah, his abortion position was the big one. But he's not the only one like scrubbing anything from like extremist positions on abortion. Like, folks were saying before primaries that no exceptions for rape or incest. And now they're pretending like they didn't say that. Masters is one of them. We have Tom Barrett, Michigan, is another one. He's suddenly not hardline on abortion, even though he's pretending to not be hardline on abortion, but he really is very hardline on abortion. And it's really important that not only voters remember that these folks already told us exactly who they are and what they believe, and no amount of website scrubbing is going to make that untrue. And it's really important that journalists hold these folks accountable and make sure they, answer for their beliefs.
There's nothing more important than the follow-up question. And that's going to be needed more than ever, because yes, scrubbing something off the website doesn't mean that your view has changed. It reminds me, and I've said multiple times and continue to until I'm proven wrong, but Tim Michaels has not yet made that move to try to moderate his position on abortion. And I believe simply because he's been weak enough to already change his position or how he expresses it on a number of things, that we will see that. Others have said, nope, he has staked his ground on this 1849 abortion ban, and he's going to ride that all the way through. I'm not so sure that he will or not, but if he does, in fact, try to moderate that view, you're saying it would be in common with what other Republicans around the country have been doing lately.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not, didn't just start this year. Last year in Virginia, the current lieutenant governor, Winsome Sears, scrubbed her website post primary to make herself seem a little less right wing extremist. And well, we all know how that turned out for Republicans in Virginia, and that is to say pretty well statewide. And it's important that that we, the media, everyone, not let these folks slip by in terms of their shimmy to the middle.
Yeah. Carolyn Fiddler joins us, political editorial director for Courier Newsroom, not to be confused with political director, which is the title that I know Chuck Todd had at NBC News. And I bring that up only because it appears he's on the outs. And in my mind, and this is related to what you were saying before, part of it, I think what single-handedly got to him, besides poor performance, was being called out at the White House Correspondents' Dinner by Trevor Noah, who said something and then responded with, I'd ask you a follow-up, Chuck, but I know you don't know what that is. And I mean, it said it all right
there. It's true,
though. Well, it's true. He hasn't been nearly as big on the follow-up as Tim Russert is, as other people
I was
are.
Just thinking, like, Tim Russert, like, laid out the blueprint for anyone who came after him. And Chuck Todd has just been dropping the ball. And, like, he's a nice guy. Seems he's like a good person. But, like, that doesn't give you the right to have a TV show where you let Republicans come on and say whatever they want unchallenged, which is basically what he's
No, and we are definitely singing from the same hymnal on the need to really rethink how not just the Sunday shows, but how political journalism overall operates, and less stenography. Even though that, again, it leaves an opening for somebody to say, well, our news product is unfiltered and we're just going to put it out there. But you're not doing anybody any favors if you're passing along, misinformation in real time.
Yeah, that's not journalism. That's not journalism. That's transcription, as you said. That's not analyzing facts, and that's not helping the general public make informed decisions. It's just not.
We talked last week with Mark Jacob about how refreshing it was that the Cleveland Plain Dealer did not cover an event with J.D. Vance and their guest, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, because of the ridiculous restrictions that were being put on press who wanted to cover these events. And we said at the time that, this should stop being about access, that, they won't come on our interview show or on our network if we don't play along. There's plenty of time for content just in playing back clips of them and fact-checking them and being focused more on serving the voter than on serving the viewer, which oftentimes are the same person, but you serve them in different ways. And I think that's just what we need to see more of, is more voter service.
Yes, agreed. Journalists aren't journalists nationwide and just writ large in the media industry are losing credibility with rank and file Americans because they're trying to toe this this weird line of not being yelled at for being too liberal by conservatives and then also like telling the truth. And the most effective thing Republicans and conservatives ever did was convince the media that the media had a liberal bias, which has never been true. But right wing got them to act as though it were true, and media has been in trouble ever since.
I mentioned Florida and Ohio, so let's hit both of those right now. In that, DeSantis is being opposed by a former governor, Charlie Crist, a Republican turned Democrat, and then the Senate race, Marco Rubio is being challenged by Democrat Val Demings. We know that Florida is an uphill climb for Democrats. It's kind of like Texas in that it always looks like the potential should be there, but it's the political version of the lettering on a rearview mirror that says, objects. In this case, it's objects may be farther than they appear, which in this case would be, Democratic chances of catching Republicans. But between those two races in Florida and Beto O'Rourke running against Greg Abbott in Texas, what do you think, Carolyn? Is Charlie Brown going to kick the football in at least one of those three races?
Oh, gosh. You can't ask me to get optimistic about Florida. Definitely not Florida. And Texas is its own creature. And the thing about actually something about both states. Texas has improved on this in recent years, but the political infrastructure for Democrats and progressives in Florida has not been in very good shape for a long time. And that harms every candidate who runs as a Democrat in Florida. And it has harmed them and will harm them for years to come unless progressives get that infrastructure pieced together. Like, look at Georgia. We have two Democratic senators in Georgia because of incredible infrastructure, like political infrastructure work that groups like Stacey Abrams' group did put together, and the party rallied. And now, like, people are talking to voters, Democrats are talking to voters in Georgia like year round. And that is why we have two U.S. senators from Georgia. And in Florida, that doesn't exist, and it needs to. And it makes me really worried about Democratic prospects there this fall. And Texas, oh gosh, that's a tough nut to crack. And maybe we'll get there this year, maybe we won't.
You raise a great point about the infrastructure behind any state's political system. And yes, most of the time, it is the state party, but not exclusively. There are definitely states where other groups decide to work, you know, outside of the party or you know, just beyond the party to get things done. Stacey Abrams is a fantastic example in Georgia. It's not that she's not, you know, affiliated with the Democratic Party of Georgia, but she is, you know, a kind of a one-woman force for voter registration and for getting new people motivated to come into the tent. In Wisconsin, Ben Wickler has been a breath of fresh air in the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. And again, tried to build an infrastructure that I can tell you from the inside had some real stress points between people that wanted to work through the county party system mm-hmm. and those who wanted to bypass the county party and form their own, you know, independent groups. Now, again, mm-hmm. nothing necessarily wrong with that, but you have to pick a plan and stick with it right. in yes. any given state. And so when you tell me in Florida that the state party just doesn't have that kind of a structure, it helps our listeners understand that elections are not just decided on 30-second commercials, that there right. actually is a lot that goes on to either enhance voter contact, which helps drive turnout, or it's absent. And in the absence of that, commercials alone usually don't get it done.
That's correct. TV ads, those 30-second TV ads that start glutting the airwaves in the last month of any election cycle. Like, most voters have A, already made up their minds, and or B, a lot have already even cast their votes in that last month, depending on what state you're in and what your early voting laws are. And it's actual voter contact and making sure that voters feel heard, not just when you need their vote, but year round is incredibly important. And we've seen that pay off in places like Virginia in the last decade. And as you mentioned, Wisconsin is an important example of that too. And until more states like Florida get sort of that piece of the puzzle, like, in its proper place, it's going to be really hard to win statewide elections.
And in Wisconsin, the groups that I refer to as democracy's little helpers, you know, out there, there's people that don't want to necessarily work within the Democratic Party, but they are active with Citizen Action and do canvassing that way, or conservation voters, or a host of other groups. My point being that there are so many ways for somebody to get involved. And they, if they say, I don't want to be part of a party, you don't have to. There are plenty of other ways that somebody can get involved. Carolyn Fiddler joins us from Courier Newsroom, political editorial director. In Ohio, apparently a lot of Republican resources are going to J.D. Vance and being pulled from states like Alaska, for example, where Lisa Murkowski, I guess, is looking to be in good shape, I guess. But J.D. Vance has been I thought was falling behind in the polling. Are they saying that they still think they can drag J.D. Vance across the finish line in Ohio?
They definitely think they can. I mean, based on recent elections in Ohio, especially statewide, they have no reason to think they can't rescue this. But the fact that they need to dump that much money in there to pull it out for him is wild and good news for Democrats, frankly.
And I should note that is that's the Senate seat, right, in Ohio that we're talking about there. We will not have enough time before the break to
talk about Pennsylvania, where, like Wisconsin, there's a governor's race and a Senate race. It's just that it's not every day that you find video of you know, your candidate for governor, you know, praising Nazis, you know, who are flying you know, Confederate flags or something, and telling them, hey, good job, guys, we're with you. So we're going to ask Carolyn about that and a couple of the other things that's happening. And then we'll get back to the Wisconsin races as well. Right after we take this break, you're up.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Carolyn Filler joins us, political editorial director of Courier Newsroom. Courier Newsroom has 8 state-based outlets around the country. Up North News in Wisconsin being the best of them, in one radio host public opinion.
I think you're biased.
Just a slight bias that I might have. So we've been talking about what's happening in some of those states and elsewhere, just so you feel like, you know, we're not operating in a silo in Wisconsin when it comes to politics and the themes and the things that are being discussed. Although I will say, in turning to Michigan briefly, that a lot of the talk has been about the 5 men who were on trial as part of a kidnapping plot. You know, thinking about or working toward kidnapping Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and you know what a national nightmare that would have been. But the news copy seems to indicate that in and of itself is not necessarily moving the needle with voters, and that they're going to decide that governor's race probably on some of the more traditional issues. Do you get that impression as well?
I do. I mean, it's terrifying and frightening that folks, these people, went after a sitting governor and had plans to physically remove her from office and possibly do her harm. It doesn't sound real. It sounds like terrible TV writing, but it happened. And, you know, the fact that this trial has happened and and, you know, justice has begun to have been dealt out to these folks does kind of take it off the plate. And, you know, you can be bothered and troubled by that and still be worried about buying groceries and, you know, sending your kids back to school with COVID still a thing. And there are lots of things on people's minds that any governor is in the position to address. And those issues are what that governor's race is going to be won and lost on.
I guess the only thing I can assume then is that more establishment Republican politicians in Michigan have done a good enough job of putting distance between themselves and that voters don't make the connection that, you know, maybe the whole reason they were thinking about, you know, conspiring to kidnap the governor is that, you know, there's a party that's become increasingly unhinged in its rhetoric. But, you know, how voters aren't punishing a party that, you know, has rhetoric that could lead to that kind of behavior, even if it wasn't carried out, is kind of a mystery to me. But
I mean, the sitting Speaker of the House, like, spoke to one of those groups that was involved in that kidnapping plot. He, like, went to one of their rallies and was like, hi, I'm the Republican leader, you know, of the state House, and I'm here to talk to y'all. He had them into his office to talk to them. Like, this is not fringe anymore. This is part of the Republican Party. And that's just a fact of life, and it's terrifying, and we're all really glad the governor is okay.
And it needs to be out there more that this is, you know, the fringe is no longer on the fringe. You know, the call is coming from inside the House.
It's true. And the thing is, like, her opponent is very extreme, but because she's not out there, Tudor Dixon isn't out there, you know, flying a Trump flag, like, literally every day, she is being regarded as a little more middle of the road, which is just a lie. Like, she was like a week ago, she was saying that rape victims carrying a child resulting from sexual assault return would help with healing. That is false. That is, like, I don't have to say that, but at the same time, like, I can't think of anything that would be more hurtful to the healing process after sexual assault than being forced to carry this
forced
ongoing reminder of what happened to you. It's bonkers.
Right.
Anyway.
And it offers again that reminder that so many people are saying that, you know, women are going to be the difference maker for Democrats this year. And it's not like there are only, you know, a handful of women that actually embrace that, you know, those kinds of values and that kind of line of thinking about, you know, forcing women to carry, you know, their rapist pregnancy all the way to term, or forcing a pregnancy with a fetus that, you know, that is already gone, you know, yeah, to carry that through the term. That is so out of the mainstream. And yet there are plenty of women as well. So we, again, there just cannot be, nothing can be taken for granted over these next 70 days, 10 weeks from now when we do the election. Carolyn Fiddler joins us from Courier Newsroom. Let's move to Pennsylvania, where the candidate for governor, Doug Mastriano, is a colorful person, to put it.
I don't know. I feel like he is big into gray.
like the unions of the Confederacy. What did he tell people what he did?
Well, he came upon. Well, he is a Civil War reenactor himself. Like, there are lots of pictures out there of him wearing the colors of not the side that Pennsylvania fought on. In fact, the bad guys. We can call them the bad guys. The South. They were not in the right. Mm-hmm. They were traitors. I say this as a Virginian who grew up just down the road from where Robert E. Lee was born. Like, no, bad guys. They got it wrong. Anyway, but Mastriano is a big fan, and there's video of him congratulating folks who are playing the part of the South, and there's pictures of him playing the part of the South. And like, if you're so pro traitor, like, why are you trying to run a state?
Well, right. And so I believe I read somewhere as well that there was video of him kind of, you know, praising people who were, you know, engaged in, you know, Confederate flag waving or, you know, certainly other activities. And look, you can say you're play acting all you want, but if you're running for office, you'd better be unequivocal about the side that you're on and the values that you have, and say, well, you know, that was all on stage. But I'm really, and in Mastriano's case, I think there is significant room for doubt as to which side he would support if he were back then, or if conflict arose today. I think
I don't think there's any doubt. I think he's told us exactly which side he would stand for. And it's not those cats in blue.
And again, we have in the case of his Democratic opponent for governor, and I'm blanking on Shapiro's first name, but again, Josh Shapiro, again, very well regarded in Pennsylvania, but he's not really making the headlines because you've got, of course, this guy Mastriano, who's making, you know, repeated missteps or you know, saying just outrageous things. And then in the Senate race, you've got the Dr. Oz versus John Fetterman, which is taking up so much of the attention. And I'm trying to decide if Shapiro is just like, yep, I'm just going to stay here, just let Mastriano keep, you know, pouring gas on himself and lighting matches, as opposed to, again, trying to break out and be more public. Sometimes the best thing you can do is just be quiet and let the other guy keep talking.
That's true. But he also, you know, voters need to know what to, you know, if they vote against Mastriano, they also need something to vote for. And right. So I hope he is out there flogging his message as hard as he can for the next 70 odd days.
We definitely, we talked in the last hour about my runs against colorful and loud characters for both state Senate and Congress. And the temptation was always there to that our strategy should be just let them talk. But that's never enough. You would think you're thinking, oh man, if enough people just hear them talk, they're going to vote for me. But it's, well, as we all know, it doesn't work that way at all, which takes us to Dr. Oz and Fetterman and what's happening there. And I think plenty of folks heard over the weekend about how either Oz or a staffer made these completely irresponsible comments about John Fetterman's diet and his health issues.
It was a staffer, his comms director or something. Yeah. Talking about how he'd never eaten a vegetable in his life. And I'm just like,
not helpful. No. Not helpful. I mean, everybody wants to go for the zinger, you know, when you're on a campaign staff or a comms team or whatever. And I am reminded of the times when I worked with a particularly hot-headed employee at a TV station, and every night at 10:30, you know, he wanted to fire off this angry email, and I always said, why don't you put that in your drafts folder and then come back tomorrow and look at it and see if you still feel that way. And you know, he'd be like, no. And then the next day he'd get, you know, called on the carpet and yelled at, and he'd always say, yeah, you were right. But
you can't unsend something. Like that's incredible. That's amazing advice. Like, write it. You can always send it later, but you can never unsend it. That's just how that works.
I've really tried to learn to trust my gut when you think, oh, you've got just this thing that you're going to, you know, tweet back at somebody and to go,
so tempting.
Is it the right thing?
You know? Never the right thing. Yeah. I broke my own rule about getting in fights on Twitter. Like, a couple of weeks ago, and I still feel bad about it.
It's you know, again, it's there are people that live to be first, but a lot of times it's better not to be first, but to be best at what you're doing. But to get back to the campaign here, it's the Fetterman team is doing such a great job of just pounding Oz day after day on social media, and Oz's people are guilty of so many self-owns. I mean, the most recent one is turning the Oz sign. If you turn it sideways, it says no. Instead of an OZ, it's an NO. And so in one picture, people are posing with Dr. Oz, and he thinks they're supporters. And at the very last second, they turn the sign sideways and then, you know, post that. And anyway, my question is, while we're having fun with this, I have not seen any polling. And so I have no idea if, despite all of this, we're going to end up with Senator Dr. Oz of Pennsylvania by way of New Jersey.
Right. Which state is he representing? Yeah. Yeah. No. So polls, well, certainly the last ones I saw had a big old chunk of undecided. So it is very fair to expect current margins, which have Fetterman pretty decently ahead, certain different amounts depending on the poll. But these races will tighten as more people make up their mind closer to election day. And I think Fetterman is doing everything right. He's got this great, like, central thesis of how he's defining Oz, and that is, like, he is not a Pennsylvanian in any sense, technically. And also, like, he's also not really one of us. We can't relate to him. So he's hammering that so faithfully. And, you know, Oz is, like, gave that to him. Like, he keeps, like,
right
giving gas to that fire.
But look, if you can't connect on relatability or residency, for that matter, yeah, right. you're going to be in trouble. And you don't see it nearly to the extent here in Wisconsin with Connecticut businessman Tim Michaels. But I sense you might. I can certainly hear some people saying, no, that dog ain't going to hunt. And, you know, he's Wisconsin through and through. And yeah, he certainly does appear that way in his TV ads. But, you know, your record is your record, including spending 8 of the past 9 years, you know, living primarily in Connecticut and New York City. The Evers team, Governor Tony Evers' team, does not seem to be pounding away at that. But I don't think it's going to go away, that, you know, because, again, we're looking for that relatability. And it's not enough to just not shave for 3 days, stand next to a pickup truck and say, I'm one of you. At least that's at least that's what I suspect. I don't know what you think of that. Is he?
The same thing happens to my face when I don't shave for 3 days. But doesn't do me much good in a photo shoot.
Look, the way Tim Michaels typically looks to people is in a suit. He's a construction executive. He goes to high roller events. To say that now, like he did in his tweet yesterday, that, you know, he's basically a ditch digger, you know, and that he learned from the bottom up rather than being handed the company by his dad. And then you move away to Connecticut and then come back to Wisconsin just to run for governor. Again, it's not being played up nearly to the extent, I don't think, in the general public that, say, Dr. Oz is. But Oz is also so blatant about it, about saying, I don't know how many homes I own. I think technically it's two. When what was the right answer? I think it was 10.
Yeah.
So I suspect we've heard a little bit about where Tim Michaels has lived, does live. But there may be more to come on that.
I mean, and
on
Connecticut businessman Tim Michaels has a nice like ring to it, and it's kind of rolls off the tongue.
Connecticut businessman Tim Michaels, I'm guessing, is not flying coach everywhere that he's gone. And I sense we may hear more about that as well. Carolyn Fiddler from Courier Newsroom will be back with more after this. You're up north. Can I tell a story about Tears for Fears here? We're with Carolyn Fiddler on Up North News. I, at University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, was the station manager for the student radio station way back when. And to tell you, this was the 85-86 school year when we were playing brand new artists like U2 and Bon Jovi. And they're still around. And I had one of those friends in college who is all about the non-commercial music and always wants to tell you, you know, you should be listening to this because they're not selling out. Right. And I, you know, she was a great friend, trusted her. And you know, she was all about, there's this group, Tears for Fears. And, you know, made me listen to the record. For those of you kids out there, a record is a thing that we used to listen to where we'd put a needle on it and music would come out. And she was all about Tears for Fears and playing that. And then that song was a hit, followed by what, Shout and Sowing the Seeds of Love. And it was just funny to see. At that point, she completely disowned them. Wanted of nothing course. To do with them. You know, I mean, was the music the same? Yes. Was the music still good? Yes. But, you know, they'd gone commercial at that point. So I always keep in mind that every good musical act was a starving artist at some point that had fans until they hit the big time and actually, right. you know, made money out of it. Tell me you don't have that same sordid history of like working for a college radio station or something like that. Cause when you pulled up Tears for Fears as a request, I thought that might be the case for you.
No, just really into new wave.
New wave.
I was too young for it when I like hit the first time. So it was like retro when I got into it and like, so not cool. It was kind of cool.
Well, that gets back to, We've talked before about all the various channels on satellite radio on Sirius XM. And of course, we are first and foremost big on local radio. You should be listening to your local radio all the time. But if you're not, if you're listening to one of those, there's a channel called First Wave, which is just basically that first wave of punk rock. And it's something that is, by calling it First Wave, you're not calling it oldies, which is what it would be now. It's oldies. You know, they have classic rock and they have classic vinyl. I suppose you could call it classic punk, but classic punk doesn't sound.
Oh, that just sounds depressing.
It does. But hey, first wave, you know, that's
got energy. I'm here for that.
So back in that day, then had you worked on either campaigns or for particular groups or something? Did you have like a particular introduction to the political world where you said, this is something I want to cover/participate in?
I was actually not into domestic politics at all. I was very into like foreign relations, foreign politics. I could tell you what was happening in the former Soviet republics, you know, back in like the late 90s or whatever. And then I got an internship with the Virginia Democratic Caucus. I got to work with a bunch of lawmakers. I got to do their events and get to know them and on occasion ferry them around. And I had an understanding of how state lawmakers impact people's lives in very concrete ways. And after I put A and B together, I was state politics all the way forever.
See, that was kind of my introduction to this as well, was completely by accident. It was ninth grade. And my teacher actually referred me to one of the school counselors because I was bored. You know, that it was the that was working the assignments like, you know, 2 weeks ahead of time.
Sure, yeah.
And unlike my wife, with my wife, the same thing was happening, but she was in band. So they'd at least give her a hall pass and go, here, go practice, you know, saxophone for a while.
Hey, so this me too.
There you go. Great minds. So this counselor, you know, is talking to me for just a bit. And I'm, you know, what are you interested in? And I was telling him what a news junkie I am. Again, ninth grade nerd. Mm-hmm. And so he says, hang on a second. He picks up the phone and starts talking to somebody. And I come to realize it's our state representative in the legislature from that district. And he says, by the time all was said and done, we had arranged that I was going to miss school every Thursday. Because I was ahead on all my assignments.
Sure.
I was going to get on a city bus, you know, on the east side of St. Paul, which cost a dime back then. You just had to give, you know, a bag of oats to the horse that was pulling it. But I would take this bus downtown because you could do that back then. You just let your kids go wherever. And right. Then I would get dropped off at the state capitol. And one day a week, I would shadow him and watch the legislature do its thing. And then the thing is, it was called independent study.
Right.
And so I was supposed to provide reports, and those reports were looking more and more like news reports, which somehow turned its way into journalism and being editor of the school paper. Anyway, my point about this is that state politics matters so much more than people think. And that was a light bulb moment for me, honestly, back in ninth grade, was listening to what those discussions were behind the scenes in the offices and realizing they were doing things that Congress wasn't necessarily doing and that presidents weren't doing, but that, you know, again, to get your roads paved, to have schools that were decent, to protect or not protect your natural resources, those are things that happen at the state political level. And so that carried me over into my journalism career, where again, people are like, you know, why are you carving the legislature? That stuff matters. And so here you are, basically Courier Newsroom's expert on state politics, because you understand that.
And it's endlessly fascinating. There's always something happening in state legislatures and in state politics. So Congress has recesses and there's still like a little news. We're still, you know, absorbing the news from like last week, because there was a boatload of like national political news last week, but there's always something happening on the state level. Never a dull moment.
Well, I think that makes you a good ambassador for you know, voters to remember to vote down ballot, that you can't just vote in the Mandela Barnes, Ron Johnson race, the Tony Evers, Tim Michaels race and go, I'm good. There's so much more on the ballot.
Yes. And those races will impact real humans in these states for decades to come.
And not even the humans. I mean, the elections. I mean, there are races now. And it's not just Wisconsin where there's races, not just for attorney general, but for secretary of state. That used to be a really sleepy thing, but there's other states as well where secretary of state, that's a big deal this year.
Yeah, a lot of pro-Trump candidates are running to control their state's elections. And it's terrifying if these folks win. Who knows what's going to happen with presidential certification in 24? No idea.
No, because
not being hyperbolic, really no idea.
No, really, really. This is in Wisconsin, that office has been diminished to nearly nothing. And yet now Republicans want to take it seriously because they have a gerrymandered legislature. They might win the governor's office. So if they get the Secretary of State's office, they can put all the election power there. And I mean, I think Arizona for sure, maybe a couple of other states where this is not a small potatoes thing this year.
Not at all.
Carolyn Filler, thank you so much for helping us educate folks on the musical evolution of Tears for Fears, the importance of showing cattle at the Virginia State Fair, and a whole mess of very important races around the state. And we should do this again in a couple of weeks and get an update and basically take the pulse here in Wisconsin compared to other states. Thanks so much.
Sounds great. Thank you for having me.
All right, everybody have a great day, and we will see you again on Wednesday.